This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
Is another apocalyptical prediction about to come true? Winds of death sweep across the world, and whole continents will be cast adrift in an ocean of blood.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 15, crap movies we watched this week. So, gore. We're going to start with that.
Yeah, gore.
Not to be confused with...
Your. Hunter from the future.
Football player Frank Gore. Gore Vidal. Inventor of the internet, Al Gore.
Or just good old-fashioned blood and guts gore.
We dropped the E, turned to gore.
This is gore, G-O-R. Now,
yeah, with a title like that, I'm guessing, because I haven't seen it, are we entering into post-apocalyptic... barbarian wasteland territory?
Sort of barbarian. I wouldn't say post-apocalyptic. I would say this
gore.
This is fantasy. We're in the world of fantasy now. So mm-hmm. You're sword and sandal type movie. Now, I rented this movie with great anticipation because, first of all, it's a canon film and I love canon movies. They made some of the most batshit insane movies in the 80s. We have a couple reviews on site. TCM2 was canon. Ninja 3, we have an upcoming review of a 1993 version of Hercules starring Lou Ferrigno. The thing, they did the Break-In 1 and 2, which I saw both in the theater, believe
Electric
it or not.
Boogaloo?
Electric Boogaloo, yeah. But the thing about canon is that they just put out anything and everything. it was, they're shameless. So gore, I was really excited to see this movie. The movie was... It didn't quite live up to my expectations. It was sort of...
You had expectations.
I had
the
expectations.
A film called Gore.
I had expectations for Gore.
G-O-R.
Okay, so let me tell you about Gore. Okay, this movie, one thing I did not know... Have you ever heard of the Gore series of novels?
No.
Like, you've heard of Conan, right?
Of course.
You've heard of what other fantasy novels are, Red Sonja.
Uh-huh, yeah.
What else?
I can't think of anything other than that.
But you've heard, for example, Dune, if you're going to sci-fi. Mm-hmm. I've never heard of gore. Apparently there's a series of novels about the world of gore, G-O-R, written by John Norman. So this started with John Norman's gore. So the way this movie starts off is you have this all-American college professor by the name of Tarl Carlson.
Tarl.
T-A-R-L, okay? And... He's supposed to be this all-American professor, right? But he's played by Urbano Barberini from Demons.
Oh, wow. Who was he in Demons?
He was the blonde frat boy. With the jauntily tied sweater.
Yeah. So, guys who were looking for the can of Coke in the lobby of Demons.
Yeah, so, this guy, Urbano Barberini, the awful dubbing, terrible dubbing. And there's some sort of claptrap bullshit about him having this ring that,
So he's an anthropology professor.
Yeah, well, it was given to him, and his students give him no respect, and he has a TA that he's trying to woo, and she gives him no respect. And he's driving along the road, and all of a sudden he hits a car. His car hits a tree, and he wakes up in the magical land of Gore. Mm-hmm. Okay? And in true Army of Darkness fashion, he's basically adopted as, the warrior savior of Gore. Now, what makes this movie notable, besides the fact that you have your all-American professor, blonde, played by this Italian dubbed actor,
is he sort of buff?
He does, yeah. There is some muscle tone there, but what makes it notable? First of all, there are two notable actors slumming it in this movie.
Get to that theme later when we talk about my film. We got some serious slum action here.
First of all, you have. Oliver Reed, who was in one of my all-time favorite movies, Ken Russell's The Devils.
Of course, yeah.
Oliver Reed
classic.
Is... Albert Reed is an actor, an icon, yeah, par excellence. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Guy was also an alcoholic, right? So yeah. He fell in some tough times. He ends up playing the I can't remember. He played the leader of some tyrannical land. I think his name was Sarn or something. And this poor guy, if I read him, this guy's walking around wearing, naked from the waist up, wearing, it would look like a chandelier on his head. You know what I mean? And to his credit, he didn't phone it in. I mean, he gave it his all. He's got that really great voice, so that was that. But other than Oliver Reed, I'll talk about the other slumming actor in a moment, but a couple other interesting things to note in Gore. One thing that I appreciated was that this was a PG-rated film. Canon wanted to sort of corner the market in the sense he wanted as many people to come see the movies as possible. But all your female warriors were scantily clad, and everybody in this movie wore a thong.
Good, good.
That is good.
Yeah.
So did the men.
Yeah.
That is bad.
It's a small price to pay.
the female warrior was played by somebody by the name of Rebecca Ferrati, I believe. And this woman was, she was a Playboy Playmate in 1986. Like a Frank Frazetta painting come to life. Absolutely gorgeous. Incredible. If you're going to watch Gore, basically just to see Rebecca Ferrati walking around in, bikini-esque sort of warrior attire, that's worth it. This woman is stunning. And, Urbano Barberini, he's a good, nice little hunk of man meat. So, if you're not into
Vinny Barberino?
Him is Gore. So, talking about the other slumming actor, one of the top-billed actors, receiving even higher billing than
Oliver Reed. Oh, sacrilege.
Who was in the majority of the movie, is Jack Palance, right?
Interesting. And who was given an Oscar really late in his career for that awful Billy Crystal thing.
For Sid, do you remember the one-handed push-up?
Highlight of that Oscars.
So I'm watching this garbage movie, right? And I'm and make no mistake, it is garbage. This is not your Hunter from the Future, which mm-hmm. is
a minor classic.
Entertainment. that was our first podcast, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm watching going, where the fuck is Jack Palance, right? there's no Jack Palance until literally 8 minutes before the ending of the movie. There he is. And he spoke about three lines of dialogue, and at this point, everything is sort of settled, and Ferrati's character turns to Tarl, and says, I don't trust that man.
No.
So I think they were basically setting up for some sort of sequel, which...
was never forthcoming.
Never forthcoming. So that was Gore, that was a piece of crap, but you know what? I'm sort of a canon completist, so I'm glad I saw it, and so that was the crap I watched. Chris, what about you?
All right, well, speaking of slumming it, we have Gary Busey and Yaphet Kotto in the little-known action pick Eye of the Tiger. Now,
is it Thrill of the Fight?
Not too many thrills to be had.
Well,
I was punched in the face, but yeah. It was...
Did it rise up to the challenge of its rivals?
It did not. Okay. It did not go the distance. It was stopped on cuts. We'll beat this metaphor to death. But Yaphet Kotto,
incredible
Homicide,
actor.
Life on the Streets, one of the blackest actors around.
he
was in Aliens. He was in The Heat of the Night.
Yeah,
not the original, obviously, but when they redid it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just an amazing actor. Gary Busey won the Oscar for the Buddy Holly story.
Was he winner? Was he nominated?
I don't know. He's a fine actor in his own right. A good Texan.
Yeah,
And it's easy to forget how capable a thespian he is when he's really slumming it in Donald Trump's Apprentice.
Well, see, nowadays a lot of people look at Gary Busey as a complete joke. And that's because of reality TV, Celebrity Apprentice.
He's adopted this persona as I'm the crazy guy.
But what happened to Gary Busey is that early in his career, after he did his career defining performance in the Buddy Holly story, where he either won or was nominated for an Oscar, we can't quite recall. He suffered a motorcycle accident and he wasn't wearing a helmet, so he was out of commission for a couple of years, and maybe a few of the synapses got kind of...
His teeth weren't affected by the looks of it.
If anything should have been affected from the motor, it should have been...
These shining, gleaming choppers. Anyway,
but there was a period where Gary Busey was a respected thespian, yes.
Yeah, and in this movie, which I guess was directed by some, I can't remember his name, but he also did Vanishing Point, which received some acclaim, but he's known for little else. I think he directed some episodes of Batman, whatnot. But
the original six Adam West.
The original Batman? Adam West okay. series, but yeah. he plays an ex-con who was a building contractor who comes out of prison. I don't think they say exactly for what, but obviously he's framed, and his name is Buck Matthews, which is just absolutely, utterly ridiculous.
Now, is that a reference to Gary Busey's teeth?
Oh, there you go. So, and of course, well, this is a theme from the movies I watched this week. Well, this is a Vietnam exploitation. So, Gary Busey...
Vetsploitation, we like.
A vet, yes.
Vetsploitation,
and,
yeah.
And Buck Matthews is mm-hmm. a Vietnam vet... who, again, he's trying to do the right thing by living on the straight and narrow, and he's buddies with Yaphet Kotto. Yaphet Kotto is, in his own words, as a cop, the finest black man this town has ever produced, which I thought was just a hilarious line, which is not saying much, because this town produces, like,
now,
the worst human detritus of all time. So if he's the best anything to come out of this podunk town, like...
I have to go back to something you said earlier. You said Yaphet Kotto is one of the blackest actors out there.
Yes, yeah.
Did you mean that literally?
Yes, he is a very dark.
He's a very dark-skinned man. Yes, he is.
I meant nothing more other than that. But yeah,
but he's an incredible actor.
He's a great actor, and he's the cop who's sort of, turning a blind eye to Busey's. Slash Buck Matthews transgressions when he comes out of the joint, and mm-hmm. he's still behaving like the thug he was when he went in. But anyway, he's trying to do his menial construction work. he used to be the foreman working on these homes, but now he's been demoted to just your average construction Joe. But he interrupts a sexual assault perpetrated by the local biker gang, mm-hmm. and he does this by driving his pickup through the gang in just a hilarious fashion, like off a ramp. It's just ridiculous. Anyway, of course, this gang is not to be messed with. They're sort of like, I forget what they're called. They're sort of the
it's not Los Locos.
It's one of those sort of that's a Southern California, not the Banditos or one of these guys. The guys who war with the Hell's Angel. They're sort of Latino-esque and they're really badass.
That was a Short Circuit 2 reference. Or Short Circuit 1, Los Locos.
Okay, the Banditos, whatever. We mean them no offense. I'm sure this alleged gang are a bunch of nice guys, and they're in no way affiliated with criminal activities. Anyway, as a caveat, the Banditos. They're just a biker aficionado group.
They enjoy riding a motorcycle.
They do.
There's nothing wrong with that. But anyway.
When Busey gets out of jail, he apparently saved the life of this Latino guy, and who gives him his number and says, anytime you need anything, and I mean anything, you give me a shout. Well, Busey, understandably, is on the receiving end of retribution for saving this woman mm-hmm. from this assault, so he has to fend off these bikers. And so he enlists the help of this guy who's now in Miami, this Cubano drug lord, who...
Was it the same Cubano drug lord from Miami Connection? Or,
he phones him, and out of desperation, he's like, I need your help. You would think he's going to send over a bunch of Latino gangster types to help Busey fight off this gang, but no, he sends him a truck, which is interesting. Like, it appears in this loading van, so it's this like souped up Ford F-150 with like machine guns coming out of it. Mm-hmm. And so Busey, as this enterprising, I don't know what division he served in Vietnam, but he knows how to blow up things, he knows how to kill everybody, he's great with arms, so he just takes on this gang and rids the town of this biker gang. So that's Eye of the Tiger, and yes, Eye of the Tiger, the song, features in the beginning credits and the last credits.
Wow.
So, yeah, and I don't know, I guess...
How did they get the rights to that?
I think they blew their load on Rocky, and I think no other offers were forthcoming for that shitty song, so anyway. It was a few years after Rocky, and one-hit wonder band was not doing really
well.
Can you name another hit by them?
I can name two.
Okay.
Burning Heart, and that's from Rocky IV. The Search Is Over.
These are not songs that are, sung with gusto on karaoke nights. Eye of the Tigers, they're one hit, let's be honest. Okay, the other, and going on the theme of Viet exploitation.
That's
exploitation.
Yep.
is Mario Van Peebles in Exterminator 2.
Awesome.
Yeah, now Mario Van Peebles is the son, the scion of
Melvin
who's the legendary blaxploitation director.
Badass song.
So this one, I got to confess, I went into it having not seen Exterminator 1, mm-hmm. but I feel like I got my fill of Exterminator because we just saw The Nest, which is about cockroaches that are wreaking havoc on an island.
If this was, this could be called Pest Control Agent.
So this one features Mario Van Peebles as the head of this gang, and he's sporting a high-top fade, which is like a kid in play, sort of flat-top black afro hairstyle.
Kind of like Arsenio Hall as well, back in the day,
And he's kind of like, and you know, he gives a speech similar to the speech in The Warriors.
Okay, we always come back to The Warriors.
And he even calls his gang Warriors and says, you know, we got to take control of these streets. So he's in this sort of battle with these, you know, these mafia stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
So he's battling with them over control of the New York street. So this is obviously pre-Giuliani, pre-gentrification.
Right.
This is hardcore New York.
This is the real New York. I love to see in movies.
So you got, you know, prominently featured, I forget the name of the park in the Bronx, but it's a big park in that borough, and there's mm-hmm. breakdancers and everything. Well, the two stars, I forget they're really nobodies, but mm-hmm. the one guy and his buddy, they're Vietnam vets. And the one guy drives a dump truck,
mm-hmm.
and the other guy is a sort of, he's a vigilante in the style of Charles Bronson. So in the first scene, mm-hmm. you know, an elderly Jewish couple, they're gunned down by Van Peebles' gang in their store. And
a brutal
killing. But as the gang is fleeing, mm-hmm. this exterminator, in quotes, shows up and lays waste to a few members of this gang.
Now, was he brandishing a flamethrower?
He was.
Because I saw Exterminator 1, right?
Yes, so there, the flamethrower uh-huh. image was so iconic from the first one that they decided to develop that for the second one. So he's wearing like a, you know, a welding mask, and he's got his flamethrower,
mm-hmm.
and we discuss flamethrowers in Land of Doom, the awful Land of Doom. So you end up with this fight between this Vietnam vet, this mm-hmm. vigilante vet against Mario Van Peebles, who's wearing this, you know, modified football padding. And you mm-hmm. can see the pad sticking out of his shoulder. It's meant to be like a Mad Max kind of thing.
Yeah, again, like the Land of Doom.
This was sort of a throwback to, on the site we reviewed Bloody Wednesday, which is another Vietnam vet, like, I'm all fucked up, I'm going to go shoot people movie. But this one, you know, I guess it speaks to the time during, at that time New York was a crime riddled hellhole, and I guess, you know, the America was ambivalent about their contributions in the Vietnam War, so, and the soldiers when they returned weren't very well received, so they were sort of I don't know if they received, I don't know, tributes, not exactly the word, but they're frequently the anti-heroes in these films.
This is not by any means a crap film. First Blood is one of my absolute favorite, you know, sort of vetsploitation sort of movies, although it's a damn good movie, but anyhow,
Or the one with the baby there, with that killer baby.
Yeah, I mean, yes. Oh my God, I was going to say this. This film will wreck you. Mm-hmm. This is an incredible movie. It's a Troma release, but it's not a Troma production. It was distributed by Troma. It's called Combat Shock.
Combat Shock is one of our favorites.
By Buddy Giovannisi, I believe his name was, the director. This movie is the bastard child of Taxi Driver and Eraserhead.
Yeah.
This movie is, like I said before, I mean, this is a harrowing movie. I mean, this will, I mean, for, you know, for a low budget movie.
And the protagonist in that is wearing the same like a jacket as this one is with the Vietnam, you know, insignia
just Combat Shock is I cannot recommend it higher. I mean, this movie, like I said before, I mean, it will wreck you, it'll disturb the hell out of you. Amazing movie. In fact, I believe Lloyd has gone on record saying that it's in the top three movies that Troma has ever distributed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, while Eye of the Tiger featured some genuine, scary, badass bikers, Mario Van Peebles' gang in this, they look like the cast of Rent. And these guys are pretty fucking, you know, like, sort of a fet. One of them is, I believe, on rollerblades, roller skates, you know, rolling around, which is never badass.
Oh,
getting
my
back
God,
to
man.
Warriors.
Exactly. Like, the most,
okay, we love New York City. There's this shitty, shitty gang in the Warriors. They appear at Union Square, which is near NYU, I believe, and they appear wearing, like, rugby shirts and... Yeah, and wearing roller skates, and they're supposed to, you know, fight with the Warriors gang, and they do battle, I believe, in the bathroom. The Warriors obviously beat the shit out of these guys because they're wearing roller skates, which is not good, not conducive to combat. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
so
anyway, I just throw a bunch of marbles on the ground. There you go, you won the fight. You know.
Two fairly forgettable, probably career low points, although I haven't seen too many Gary Busey films, but for sure a low point for Yaphet Kotto for Eye of the Tiger.
Luckily he rose above in subsequent years.
Yeah, and Mario Van Peebles, this was his first role, so he was actually on the DVD commentary talking about how grateful he was just to even get any sort of work point.
Well, that's cool.
That was kind of cool, and they're both atmospheric. One obviously set along, I think, the Texas border, but I can't be sure. It could have been New Mexico. And the other one in, pre-Giuliani, pre-gentrification, the Bronx. So really interesting films in their own right. So anyway, that's the crap we watched this week.
So
this is a series we're going to be revisiting in the future. So whenever
So just as a recap, we talked about gore.
Yeah, definitely
again,
worth seeing.
Not well, for certain reasons, but not, you know, I mean, and again, remember this is G-O-R, not...
Yeah.
Al Gore Gore Vidal, right? We talked about
Eye of the Tiger.
The Thrill of the Fight. And we talked about, what was the one called again, Chris?
Exterminator 2.
Exterminator 2. In addition, we also mentioned Combat Shock.
Combat Shock, if you take anything away from this podcast, that is the movie to see.
We basically talked about crap movies we saw this week. That is not a crap movie.
No,
And in fact, if we'd be really interested in hearing what you guys think of. If you do happen to see Combat Shock, shoot us an email and let us know what you think.
Yeah, and for more... check out our website, of course, at reallyawfulmovies.com, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.